Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. For the first time in the history of my radio career, I have on a delightful person who I have known for some time. This is not what's my line, but I am not going to mention her name because she is requesting anonymity for very good reasons. I think I'm going to call you, young lady, Mrs. Grobnik, if that suits you.
You could call me anything you want, Rick.
Let me ask you first, Mrs. Grobnik, why the anonymity? I think, and you've told me before, it's a very good reason for it.
Well, I really would prefer people to not be thinking about who is writing it as a sort of meta thing, because
sure,
it's a novel, yes, and I admit that up front, but really it's supposed to be, this is about a real person. It's being written by somebody who knows the main character, Steve.
Bertoli. What she's talking about, what Mrs. Grobnik is talking about, is one of the internet is filled with fascinating and interesting things, and believe me, tons of garbage too. But what she has started to do is to serialize a novel on a website called Substack. You can go to Roseland, Chicago, 1972.substack.com to read this. This is maybe someone else has done this, Mrs. Grobnik. Maybe someone else has tried to do something like this. How did this idea come to you to serialize? You and I have been talking about, and I've been always enthusiastic about it because I think you're a great writer, a novel. And you have decided to take this route. Why?
Whether, you know, the main thing is that I did have it almost 100% done, but it's all plotted out. There's a couple of chapters, you know, floating around out there that I haven't gotten around to writing down. And so you can't really go shop a novel that's not 100% done. But the two timelines are 1972, hence the title.
Mm-hmm.
In 1972, the main characters are 10 years old and living in Roseland, south side of Chicago.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Roseland was one of the great, still is, but it's a little beleaguered now, one of the great neighborhoods in this city on the far, far south side. It was once, it's Michigan Avenue down there, rivaled the Loop as a shopping destination.
Well, certainly for the people on the south side, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, no one was going to come to Roseland from downtown or the north side to shop.
Or from Glencoe or something.
But no one had to leave the neighborhood to get anything.
Yeah.
You had Gately's People Store, which, if you've ever seen pictures of it, it is like this little mini Marshall Fields. It's kind of like a little downtown Chicago Bedford Falls, if you've ever seen pictures of it in the heyday.
You have done such great, incredible research about that neighborhood and about the year 1972 that the vibrancy of that neighborhood is it's hard to believe now, is it not?
Unfortunately, yes, yeah. as you know. And to all the Roseland people out there, I admit I am not a Roselander. I married into it.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start being related to and living among ex-Roselanders, you just become steeped in it.
Yeah. Sure you found, since you decided to set it there in 1972, why? Because You had a sense of its vitality, or this is a perfect nurturing ground for Steve Bertoli?
A little bit of all the above. I started the story focusing on the main characters in 2003,
right,
when they're adults. And I knew at that time that they came from Roseland and they had their relationships in 1972, was 10 years old. As 10-year-olds, and then were broken apart, and they meet up together again as adults, and you find out what happens.
In an office building downtown, yeah, I know, yeah.
Well, they don't actually meet in the office
there,
building, but
yes.
And so a couple of different things. I was 10 in 1972, and while a lot of this does entail research, you want to ground, to me anyway, I like to ground something in something I know. Mm-hmm. So while I have to research a lot of stuff, I don't have to research.
Without mentioning your name, that goes back to your years as a reporter in this town.
Right, right. But I don't have to research what it's like to be a 10-year-old in 1972 exactly. on the South Side in second, third generation immigrant families. This I know. And so
one of the hallmarks of Roseland Chicago 1972.substack.com and if you go there and you then can subscribe to your Twitter feed, it is to dive deeply, and I mean deeply and wonderfully and amusingly and entertainingly and provocatively, into that year as reflected in the pages of the great late Chicago Daily News. Why that newspaper?
Well, my family was a Daily News family. So we were Mike Royko fans, of course. You couldn't be one without being the other. But the main thing is that everybody at that time read a newspaper,
yes.
and different people's
yeah.
families.
Yeah, makes me terribly wistful.
Right,
yes.
right. And I know your family was a four newspaper family.
Absolutely.
But of course, most people had one newspaper.
Yep.
They got the Tribune or the Sun Times
the
or
morning.
The Daily News
the
or Chicago Today,
yep.
and most people didn't have the money to get four newspapers, so they would get one, and they all had their own personalities.
Oh. No question.
And it's just kind of interesting which families would subscribe to which newspaper. My mom was a little brainy, so we got the Daily News.
She could say these foreign correspondents.
Yeah, absolutely.
What goes on in
absolutely.
Different lands,
yes.
Different
yes.
lands. When you started to dig into those papers, and I'm assuming you probably had to do it on microfilm, yes?
Oh, the Daily News is all on microfilm.
I have to spend
a couple of days a month in the microfilm room still. Yeah.
I got to tell you, that must be a joy. We will keep talking to my friend, who I'm calling Mrs. Grobnik, in honor of Mike Royko, who has become a big part of Roseland, Chicago, 1972, justifiably. And I want to ask this writer, there are three chapters posted so far.
Yes.
1, 2, 3. The third one just came out. There's going to be roughly one a month of this novel in serialization form. And I'm assuming, Mrs. Grobnik, that as you write this, things change. I mean, a book is an organic kind of item. And what you may have written 8 months ago might be vastly different as chapter 7, let's say.
It's all pretty much written, though.
It is.
So, yeah. So while I may
tweak
things a little bit as I go along, but nothing major is going
to
change.
I just think this is fascinating, fascinating. I can't wait to read the entire thing. We got to take a little commercial break, and we'll come back and visit Roseland, Chicago, 1972. And my guest will explain what Substack is, because I think it's, in many ways, a bright light in the future. Welcome back, you listeners. My guest, my anonymous guest, who I am referring to as Mrs. Grobnik, in honor of one of Mike Royko's great characters, Slats Grobnik. I don't remember, frankly, if Mrs. Grobnik had a first name. I do believe that Mike in print always referred to her as Mrs. Grobnik.
Mm-hmm.
My guest is the author of Roseland, Chicago, 1972.substack.com. It is a serialization, as Charles Dickens used to do in the day, of her soon to be fully serialized and completed novel. Is the title of the novel Roseland? What is the title of the novel?
The title is Roseland, Chicago, 1972. Only half of it takes place in 1972.
And the other half takes place
It's kind of the iconic year.
Sure.
Right?
Well, and your hero, the hero of the book.
The events that set off 2003 begin in 1972.
Steve
right,
Bertoli. So. And in doing this, my guest has been digging deeply into the archives, and her family was, and as is the Bertoli family, as subscribers to the Daily News, and that was what they read every day. That was their paper. It came in the afternoon in those days, before it vanished completely. Mm-hmm. In digging in that history, Kate, what has impressed you about the paper in addition to Royko? And we're going to talk considerably about Mike. Mm-hmm. But what is it that you found that is striking to you as a newspaper mm-hmm. person?
I am astonished at the level of writing and the breadth that they cover in the daily news.
Yeah.
It's like a mini New York Times.
Yeah.
It's, you know, as a kid before it folded, I was reading it because kids read newspapers back then.
Sure.
There were only so many things to read laying
exactly.
around the house, and we read newspapers.
Yeah.
Read all the Vietnam stuff. You got bored with that, but you flipped through the paper and you read things as you went.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. So you absorbed things as you, even just flipping the pages, you'd see the headlines, you'd understand a little bit what was going on in the world, even if you weren't reading it. So I did appreciate it back then, but not like I do now. Now, when I look back, I'm like, oh, my God, look what they were doing.
Yeah. I mean, the coverage is to my mind, extraordinary. You were concentrating a bit on – there's a lot of sports in what – you know, when you go to this and subscribe and then you go to Twitter and you can do the same thing there and get all mm-hmm. this information. And you
it's free, too.
You post every day.
Yeah, I do, because in order to kind of, if you want to, you don't have to, but if you'd like the immersive 1972 experience, I've got two extra little items that I do in association with the book,
mm-hmm.
and one's called Mike Royko 50 Years Ago Today,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is This Crazy Day in 1972, which is a peek inside all the newspapers 50 years ago.
I think it's wonderful. I mean, I really think it's wonderful. You've got, there's a lot of sports in there.
There is a lot of sports because Steve, the hero of the book, is a huge football and Sox fan. He's a White Sox fan, but he's a little bit of a Cubs fan too, but he tries to keep that on the down low since he's on the South Side, right? So that's what he's reading. And that's really kind of how I started to do that because I needed to go research all of the Sox and the Bears stuff from 1972 because it's my husband who's the huge sports fan and he's encyclopedic, but he still doesn't have 1972 memorized. So I needed to go do that.
It's
and that's how I really started wading into
it. I've been looking at photos of Abe Gibron and George Halas and it's also so evocative of its time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you must be hearing from people. I know you're just
oh, yeah.
at the point of starting to gather a lot of readers and fans, but you must be hearing from them saying, oh, my God, I forgot.
Yeah. And that's that. There's two ways to look at it. Sometimes you read these stories, perhaps that I compile in This Crazy Day, which I'll do two or three stories a day from the various newspapers, and then I'll compile them all together into one post on the weekend so people can just, you can look at it on Twitter one day at a time, or you can get it in your email box and see everything that happened in the week. And I try and do a smattering of local political news, pop culture stuff, the sports stuff. And, you know, I don't even really have to work that hard at that.
Well,
so
you
that
just, you recently
I end up
had,
with a panorama
remember,
of 1972 every week.
I can't remember what the review was, but you had my old friend Jack Heffercamp, a Jack Heffercamp review
yes.
of some.
He went to see Deep Purple at
That's
the auditorium.
Right.
I'm so
right.
jealous of him. Oh, my God. Deep Purple at the auditorium in 1972. His description of Ritchie Blackmore on the guitar was just astounding,
Jack
wasn't
was a
it?
Good writer. He's a good. He's still around. He's
is
a good
he?
Guy. One of the interesting things. One of the things. You know, not only my you know virtually lifelong affection for you and your talent, but my you know I joined the Daily News staff 5 years after what you're writing about and mm-hmm. knew most of these people who are on Rosen Chicago 1972 are just names. I knew these characters,
mm-hmm.
especially, and you were especially drawn, and there's absolutely the perfect reason for it, to Mike.
Right.
Was that an intention from the very beginning? Or
it
did you
was.
Just,
it was because they're a Daily News family. The main family here, Steve and his mm-hmm. large Catholic family, They're daily news readers, so they're Mike Royko fans. So when his mom cuts things out and hangs them on the refrigerator, they're Mike Royko columns.
Yeah.
And you know, this is part of the fabric of everyday life back then that people talked about. And, you know, instead of talking about the latest thing on Twitter, you're talking about the latest thing your favorite columnist in your newspaper was writing. And the major person at that time, of course, Mike Royko. Everybody's talking about Royko.
But you, as a trained journalist, as someone who has been in this lunatic business for a while, in going back and rereading, you can reread Mike in the many collections of his stuff out here, but there are some of the columns that have never been collected.
Exactly.
You're reading some of those.
Yeah.
How impressed are you by what he did?
Oh, my God. Even more so, which I would not have thought was even possible, right?
Yeah.
Because I doubt it's overstating it to say that almost anybody who grew up in the late 60s to 70s, 80s, who became a reporter in Chicago, Mike Royko was one of the reasons you did that.
Yeah.
So you're already impressed by him. But then to go back and read what he was doing every single day, in the 60s and 70s, it's really impressive. And it's so, I will definitely give a pitch here to reading Mike Royko 50 years ago today, because exactly, you know, all those columns are not collected. And
oh,
to me,
absolutely, yeah.
Oh my God, when I come across a column I've never seen before,
exactly,
it's this incredible Christmas present. And they're some of the best ones, but they just didn't think that they would translate.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Today, a lot of people might not understand what they're about, who they're about, etc., but I give the context for that so that people who, you know, people who obviously are much younger than us, who don't know who all these people are that he's talking about, I'll explain it.
Also, who don't know who Royko was, who don't,
exactly,
you know, not in the Royko school as we are.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the really important aspects of Roseland, Chicago, 1972, .substack.com. Steve reads papers. Steve's a fan of Royko?
Yes.
Good. That's one of the remarkable things about it, and I'm so, so glad. It's kind of like rediscovering Mike all over again, even for me. And I'm you know, one of the great devotees of that guy.
Personal friend.
And when you, very personal. And when you realize, in as you're doing, that he did this, his batting average, speaking of sport, is an astonishment. You know, these were not like, you know, letters, columns, or, you know, nonsense off the top of your head. And at the Daily News, most of the time, most of those years, he was writing 6 days a week, because the Daily News had a weekend edition that came out on
Saturdays.
No,
he's not in on the weekends.
He never was in on the weekends?
No.
Well, I think he was probably in the 60s when he first started, because he was so, maybe very early. Yeah, he was. He had to be, because he was so insecure about his column that he thought he had to work like a stevedore to get it all done. We'll continue with my anonymous guest, who I am calling Mrs. Kropnik. We will try to drive you to Roseland, Chicago, 1972.substack.com. It is free. It is there for your enjoyment, your enlightenment, and your entertainment. And now, to really enlighten you, is the news. I have about 10 more minutes with my guest, who I am calling Mrs. Kropnik, because she, for understandable reasons, wants to be anonymous. She wants the novel that she is writing and serializing on Substack to speak for itself, and not for her and her past and what she's done to get in the way of that. When the novel is published, I am assuming, Mrs. Kropnik, that Mrs. Kropnik will not be on the cover.
No, not Mrs. Kropnik. I'm not going to plan that far ahead.
Well, you're up to chapter 3 on Substack. It is free to read. And it also, you also get, as we've been talking about, this marvelous, marvelous, wonderful look at Chicago in 1972 through the eyes of the Chicago Daily News, which was the paper that the hero of this book, 10-year-old Steve Bartoli, he's 10 years old in 1972. He grows up in the novel, in progress. How many chapters do you think there might? I know this is a horrible question to ask you. You say, "Well, it's almost finished, Rick," and blah blah blah. How many chapters do you think?
How many? There's at least 25 chapters. But you know, at some point I might post them a little bit more quickly. You know, we'll see. And then there's a couple of chapters that are so long, they're almost little novellas, so they might have to take more than a month because I don't want to overwhelm people.
Yeah,
I think it's fun to read one chapter a month.
I do too.
And come back to it.
I do too. This is a very novel way to do this, and I think it may not be Mrs. Grobnik. It may not be unique, but it's certainly unique to Chicago.
Right. And well, we know Charles Dickens did it a long time ago.
Yeah, but there were no computers.
Right.
And there was no Twitter. Dickens would have been good on Twitter.
But it is kind of a multimedia thing.
And
that's why I'm enjoying doing it on the Substack. Because, mm-hmm. It would be nice to get it published on paper. But
sure.
I don't know that anybody would include all the pictures that I'm doing I think it's so important to see all the artifacts from 1972.
Yeah.
You know, what these people were, the radios they listened to and the Meisterbrau beer that they were drinking
cases,
and the James potato chip
when
pencils.
When I'm looking at it, I'm saying, wait a minute, I was an adult in 1972 and this stuff seems like from 100 years ago.
I know. It really is like the cave drawings in the Lascaux caves. And that's really why I was like, I've got to include these. I mean, I did know people who were like, no, if your book has to have pictures, then you're not doing a good enough job on the writing. And
who
I'm
said
like,
that? Who would say that?
Anonymous people.
Well.
But my feeling is they're every bit as worthy to look at as whatever you might find digging up in an Egyptian tomb.
I think,
frankly,
Mrs. Grobnik, that they marvelously embellish the story. And the items from the newspaper. Mm-hmm. That's what a newspaper was. It was a package of words and pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And to think that a novel need not have that is crazy to me.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
When you made the decision to do this, you must have. There's a conventional way to go about publishing, and that is to print out your book and put it in a nice package and get a, you know, return envelope and send it off to publishers. Why did you go this way?
Well, in part because I do need to actually finish writing the last couple of chapters. It's plotted out, but they're not written. And you know that process that you just described is several years long.
Oh yeah.
So well, it's 2022,
and it is filled with. And it is filled with rejection, unless you were, you know, Eric Larson or John Grisham or Stephen King. It is the publishing business is so insane these days. So what I'm going to do is just continue to try to drive people to this to Roseland, Chicago, 1972.substack.com. I neglected to have you describe what Substack is, because I think Substack's very interesting.
It really is. It's a website itself. It's a platform for anybody who wants to create, they call them newsletters, basically.
Right.
And there's several, you know, really big people on there, like Patti Smith. There's a lot of really cool Substacks, which is just another way to say website.
They
say newsletter because every time you post something, it does get emailed directly to anyone who is subscribed.
And some of these people charge for that content, and some of these people are making fortunes.
Oh, yeah.
Substack. Mm-hmm. I would assume Patti Smith
Patti Smith is definitely one you have to pay for.
It is, in some fashion, it is one aspect of the future of communication. There's no question in my mind. I don't know what comes down the pike in, you know, I don't know, it's not like an e-book, but it's there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
That tells me it's going to be bigger than it is now.
I think so. And it's very reader-friendly, too, is why I picked it also. It's super easy to navigate as a reader.
Is it, do you sometimes say, wait a minute, I've got all these chapters. I'm going to give them a chapter every day now. Do you ever get that urge?
No, not really. Not really. Because and really the reason is because I had the perhaps stupid idea of doing these other two items every day.
Yeah.
It takes a whole lot more time than I imagined it was going to.
But it's time. But it is time, and I think you'll agree, it is time very well spent for
yes.
you.
Yes. Oh yeah, because it just informs so much of what I'm doing in the book. So I'm always finding new stuff to just kind of throw in while I'm you know editing before I post something.
Now you said earlier in this program that your husband is the child of Rosalind.
Mm-hmm.
What does he think of this so far? Or you don't let him read it?
Oh no, he's really digging it. He did not really read it until I put it on Substack. So I was constantly interrogating him and interviewing him for all the details that I needed. Or I'll just be writing and I'll say, hey, wait a minute. So who did this? And, you know, for the White Sox or the Bears, because if you just name a date, he'll go, oh, what happened that day? Oh, so-and-so played so-and-so. So that means this happened. So he just has this photographic memory.
Well, I think it's an interesting thing to dip that deeply into the past. My next guests, Corey Rumer Finley and mm-hmm. Marianne Mather, have started this Vintage Tribune newsletter.
I cannot wait to see it.
I know. They're wonderful people, too. And I'm talking later to Joe Farina, the son of Dennis Farina, with deep roots in Chicago.
What a Chicago accent.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Joe has one, too. But Dennis really did have one. But I think there's great appeal. And I think maybe it's because the world right now seems about as screwed up as I can remember. In many ways, people are fighting with each other. People are robbing stores on Michigan Avenue.
Yeah.
People are hurting out here, and I think if you're gonna, you can't go seek calm in the future. You can seek it and find it, I think, in the past.
Well, you know, dipping into 1972 gives you a really good perspective.
Yeah,
because you see that actually a lot of the same stuff is going on.
Politicians were always crooks.
Right.
Coaches and general
right.
managers were always mm-hmm. idiots.
Yes. So it's believe me, it's not a walk down nostalgia lane. In fact, I warn people in the introduction that there is no sensitivity reader, and 1972 is a dangerous place. So buckle up if you want to read it, because that's just the way it is.
It's a very dangerous place, and in part because there was no cancel culture back then either. You know, that's another aspect of the whole.
Well, exactly. So if you're going to write about it honestly, you can't pull your punches.
Well, Mrs. Grobnik, you're anonymous now, but one day you will be, if you continue on this route, I don't want to say you'll be rich and famous. No writers get rich. But
no, I'm not expecting that.
You will enlighten and entertain a number of people.
Well, thank you.
By going to Roseland, Chicago, 1972.substack.com. You will be absolutely hooked. It is great to see you, whatever your name is, and love to the family.
Thanks,
Rick.
Love to
the family.